Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. First, we had a banger of a doubleheader on Thursday night, so we talked about both of those games. We check in on the Indiana Fever defense, looked a lot better. We talk a little bit about the Atlanta Dream offense, some growing pains happening right now without Bree Jones. We flip to the Lynx and the Valkyries, where Olivia Miles absolutely lost her mind, but the Golden State Valkyries threw some different looks at her and continued to be a pretty annoying team to face. We check in on all four of those teams, and then we bounce around a little bit. We give our games of the weekend. We give some player shout-outs. We toss some questions back and forth. We had a lot of fun on this episode. We hope you enjoy. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Friday, sir. How are you?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce, ready to talk about this season of competition.
We're sing-songy on this Friday. I like it. Steve, we're starting with the W this time around, which is a fun shift for us as we have game two of the NBA Finals happening a little bit later. We'll be going live for that one. But we're on the W side. And on the W side, Steve, we are coming off of an absolute banger of a slate. It's been a lot of fun games this week overall. We'll bounce around towards the end of the podcast. But This Thursday night slate, we got the Atlanta Dream, who have been 50 defensively pretty much all year long and have been amongst the top of the Eastern Conference for how much you care about conferences. And we have the Indiana Fever, who there's been a lot of conversation around what their defense has looked like the last couple of days. They had this long layoff to get things right. We talked about their defense on Tuesday. And so we have this matchup, a rematch of their first round series from last season. And the Indiana Fever get it done. An 83-71 victory in this game. Huge night for Kelsey Mitchell. Quality game for Aaliyah Boston. Caitlin Clark bounced back, didn't shoot well, but played well overall in this one. And so, Steve, as we are coming off of a conversation about the Fever's defense, and they were able to hold Atlanta to 71 in this one, I want to swing the ball to you. See, was there anything that stood out to you from them defensively in this one? Did anything feel different for you?
Well, I mean, I think there was a conscious effort from the team to have more activity, to try more things, to execute more coverages, to try and do their work earlier. And so it wasn't just, hey, we're only doing this. We're going to try different things. You know, if we switch, we're going to battle, we're going to deny, we're going to have short recover scenarios, we might trap every now and then. So just a willingness to put more things on the table is what stood out to me over the course of the game. And I think overall, the Fever are kind of in a unique situation where if the defense is at a certain level that's not great, it's going to be easy to read. It's going to be easy to see. It's going to dictate how they get out offensively. It's going to be tough. But when they're able to get stops consecutively, play with energy, now push on the other end, they become what you think the Fever will be. And I think the best part for Indiana is probably, one, holding the Dream under 40%, and then also having an offensive game where it wasn't necessarily a perfect world because the Dream defense is really good. I think it was 30 main field goals, 16 assists. But you have Caitlin Clark, impactful. You had the start from Kelsey Mitchell that just kept going out throughout the game. You have Aaliyah Boston. So it's a reminder of the top level that they have and what they can kind of produce on both ends of the floor. And I think for them, part of the journey, I think, is, you know, defensively, they're going to have to play at a certain level, but they're going to have to figure out how to win different types of games if they want to hit that top tier of this W season. And again, it's a very competitive league. So you talk about a banger of a doubleheader. It was four teams that are either solidly in your top five so far this season, or one of them was on the, like, was supposed to be up there, not there, and one of them surprised you, maybe two. Maybe three, actually, if you think about it. But I think for me, it's just more the collective mindset to kind of just, hey, we're going to pressure, we're going to show help when we need to, we're going to recover, we're going to make the second effort, we're going to make multiple efforts defensively. If the Fever can just consistently stay within that range, they give themselves a different type of chance than when teams or offenses are able to kind of dictate terms and cause a little bit more chaos.
Okay. I'm right there with you. I think for me, heading into this matchup, and we talked about it a little bit on Tuesday, just what's the attempt going to be? And so I love that you started with the fact that we got multiple attempts from the Indiana Fever. This was not a game where we're switching a bunch. We're never going to do it again. Here's a whole new game plan. It's like, no, we could just mix this in with a more timely fashion. As something that you mentioned on Tuesday, Steve, with their switching. It's like they have shown flashes of having nuance. It hasn't always just been, well, someone looks like they're going to screen. We're going to switch this and give the matchup. Like there has been elements of we can pressure this. We can navigate this. We can stay home and we can kind of switch late if we need to. And so for me, it was encouraging within the switching. One, for the people that have been complaining about that, they did not switch as often as they did earlier this year. So switched about 24% of the pick and rolls that they saw. About half of what the rate has been the previous four games. So we did see a shift there. But within the actual switching, it was cleaner with their guard-to-guard stuff when Atlanta tried to get to it. So you were able to keep the ball in front there. And even with the nuance portion of the program, it just felt like there were more instances of let's navigate this if we can and then keep things at home. As far as actual adjustments defensively, I was intrigued and a little surprised that they put two on the ball back on the table. Well, we saw some of these hedges from the actual bigs. Aaliyah Boston sprinkled it in. Myesha Hines-Allen was sprinkling in, particularly when Caitlin Clark was defending the ball handler. And for them to navigate that as well as they did throughout that game, Atlanta was able to get them a couple times in the first half. But overall, you saw the effort from the big to push that guard out, whether that was Ryan Howard, Alicia Gray, whoever. Caitlin Clark was able to get back and stay with hers. And if they had to rotate, you would see whoever was lower on the floor picking up the roller. And then the person that was involved in the initial hedge kind of floats to the corner, whether that was Nas Hillman being spaced, Angel Reese being spaced. And I'm intrigued by that. This isn't the first time that the Fever have ever sprinkled this in, even this season. Like we saw a lot of hedge recover stuff from them or just bigs at the level last season. But them opening the gate with, now let's sprinkle this in. We're going to show an effort to protect Caitlin in a way, but also let's ramp up the activity. Let's force ourselves in a way to kind of rotate and communicate. Because I think some of the things that were coming out of some of the post-practice interviews throughout the week was, one, there was a players meeting to kind of talk things and be honest with each other. But also, they clearly wanted to ramp up how much they communicated.
How did you find out about that meeting?
You see, Sophie told them. Like, ah. shout out Kelsey Mitchell for that one. It's always a fun time where players are like, well, this ain't y'all business. It's like, well, yeah, one of your teammates told us. It's like, you can't actively react maybe the way that you want to. That was a good bit. But clearly, like, getting back to consistent effort and more consistent communication was a bit key for them heading into this game. And I think to execute that kind of style where we're hedging, we're flying around, we're passing off matchups, you have to have a baseline level of communication to do that. And so I was pleased with the fact that they did so on that front. And so quickly to the numbers front, and I'll pass it back to you, Steve. A 92.2 defensive rating for the Indiana Fever in this game. That was the third best mark of the season so far. An effective field goal percentage allowed under 40%. That was their best mark of the year. Only 37 pick and rolls for the Atlanta Dream in this game, which struck me as odd. I wonder how much of that was the Fever kind of dictating terms early with their coverage and how much of that was some feelings of rudderlessness with the half-court process. I want to get to your Dream thoughts in a little bit, Steve. And Carl Smesko was not very pleased with what the offense looked like, if you listen to his post-game presser as well. And as mentioned earlier, switch rate was way down from what we had seen. And when they did get to some of those hedges in pick and roll, under 0.7 points per possession on those trips, an elite number. So I'm curious to see how much that continues in terms of the volume as we move forward. But impressive stuff from the Fever defense in this one, Steve.
Well, I mean, let's stick with a couple of things you said. I think what's interesting is when the Fever felt at their best this season defensively, it's been the rotations behind whatever covers they're trying to hit. And so their ability to scram and rotate and nail the second portion has been what's held up the first part. And that's kind of like a defensive pillar, obviously. You need multiple efforts. You need the first level to be good, but you need the second level behind that to be great. And so, as you pointed out, when the Fever were able to nail those rotations, it was tough. Dream didn't have the traditional openings. The Fever were able to recover, reset, and be fine. What gets interesting is the more you put that on tape, the more teams can prepare for that. So are you ready for that to get dinged? And like it feels like, okay, is this going to be the same thing that happened with the switching, where the switching looked good, you're able to scram people out, you had nuance, teams were like, actually, don't care. Oh, this didn't really work.
Let's do this.
Let's try this. Cool. We got more rotations behind it. We're good again. Oh, we don't care. Oh, okay. So I think it's a back and forth and a balance. Now, I'm glad you brought up the Dream. Now, I'm intrigued because I have a question for you. Because obviously the Dream have been a very, very good team this season. I think we can all agree on that. They shot 34% mm-hmm. in this game. That is what I believe to be, if I can do math correctly, the third time they have shot sub 40% this season so far. And this is a dream machine that offensively had a certain formula last year. We're going to let it fly. We're going to get it up. We can do things in the half court, but we're getting up and down the court. Have worked to kind of just balance things out a little bit. Have a little bit more pace as far as like tempo in the half court. Have a little bit more execution. They still are reliant on the three ball. Like, it's down from last year, but 31.2% of their points come from the three-point line. The difference this year feels like they're up in points in the paint. They're fourth in the league. 48.1% of their points come from in the paint. How do you absorb and kind of balance out the dream trying to figure different things out that will pay off for them in the long run, I think, because they have more of an ability to fight in the half court. They have a stronger defense. But it does lead to the offense at times feeling different than last year and not having the same type of automatic movement, the same type of automatic flow. How do you feel about that journey for the Atlanta Dream?
I'm glad you framed it in that way. I think this is ultimately going to be important for them. As we saw Bree Jones taking some shots pregame, not close to returning yet, doesn't seem like. Hasn't done 5-on-5 stuff yet, so we're obviously waiting on her. It was, if we zoom into this Fever matchup, it was yet another game where I'm watching and it's like, you know, they could probably use Bree Jones right now. Like, one, this is just an all-star caliber player, so like, duh, let's get the player that helps make us better. But to the half-court offense in particular, and we talked about this last year, it was Atlanta, a lot more threes under Carlesmesco, but they also led the W in post-ups by a wide margin. And so they were able to get into some of their flow-based stuff, and if all else failed, or if there's just a matchup, let's just press the Bree Jones button. Or when Brittany Griner, whether she was starting or coming off the bench, let's just press the Brittany Griner button and then kind of flow out of that. And so having an entire season to this point where the Dream just have not had the fail-safe. It is Ryan Howard, are you on a heater? Alicia Gray, are you on a heater? Are y'all dictating terms inside the arc? Or are we forcing turnovers and getting transition baskets? They haven't had just the pure, if we run this, we will get two on the ball and we will generate something good, whether we make the shot or not. And so I've been trying to like balance out, ooh, this doesn't look great. And for large stretches of that Fever game, it did not look great. With they are missing the one player on their roster that can just generate a double team almost at whim in Bree Jones. And so I think it's important for them to get the reps to figure out what else they can get to. And this is where like the side-to-side flow where Angel Reese is your initial handoff partner or pick and roll screener. If it doesn't work, we now flow to Naz Hillman and she can make decisions and go from there. It is important, I think, for them to build out that foundation. And so when you enter Bree Jones back into the equation, ideally you have that flow-based stuff. You obviously have the transition attacks if you're forcing turnovers. And then if all else fails, Bree Jones is better than your big or just bigger than your center. We can just dump it to her and she can either get buckets, get to the free throw line, or you're sending help. And that once again opens up the chain of getting y'all in rotation. We can get toward these catch and shoot literally within their offensive flow. So like, I haven't loved what I've seen overall from the Dream offense this year. They are 10th in offensive rating. And as you noted already, another game in which they shot under 40% from the field, but I am still balancing that out with they're missing the fail safe. And I think that's where, and I want to toss this question to you. I think this is where you get into some of the Ryan Howard usage to where ideally there's like a perfect blend of on ball and off ball creation for her. And it feels like when you do get to these moments where the offense feels a little shaky, it is more, Ryan, we need you on ball because you are the player that teams are more willing to put a second defender on if we want to hedge, pick and roll, or whatever. It's a good thing, but I don't know how fair that is to Ryan at times in terms of finding her own rhythm and being able to like really move her around the board. And so a general question I want to toss to you, Steve, is how have you felt about, not necessarily the Ryan Howard season, because I think she's been incredible this year overall, but how have you felt about her usage within this context without Bree Jones?
I mean, I think it's just, this is the context of the Dream, and this is the responsibility that Ryan Howard has for the Atlanta Dream. And it's a give and take with it, right? So you can watch certain possessions in certain moments, certain games, feel like, ooh, this doesn't feel great or fair. Yeah, remember, you put Ryan Howard off ball, you're giving defenses a chance to be try and be physical, try and deny, try and drain some clock, trying to push a catch out. Are you getting exactly what you want from that every single time? If you only keep Ryan Howard on ball, you're allowing defenses to kind of dictate terms, trap, go two on the ball, give drop, whatever they want to do defensively, you're kind of letting them kind of show what they want to attack to a degree. I think the thing with Ryan Howard is she's such a microwave that it's hard because, yeah, you can have nights like this, but what about the nights where it just doesn't matter? I think that's like the last part game for an offensive player. Yeah. Like, it just, it like, whatever you're trying to do, I personally don't care about it, and I'm going to score, and now you have to deal with me in a different level. So it's like, that's more context to me than purely just like, okay, Bree Jones is out. Like, that's just kind of the gift and curse of a talented offensive player who can do a lot of things. You want to sandbox it to a degree. You have a deep trust and a need for them to produce. So it's not always going to be one exact thing that we're going to ask, like, because we may need to get some movement, and that may require you to be spaced on the right wing while we try and get some movement going. We may need you to initiate a set. We may need you to close a play for us. It's just kind of back and forth and changes. I think what gets interesting for me overall, the Dream trying to figure out how to generate assists for each other intrigues me. I don't think they have a game. They have one game over 22 assists this year. They have three games, 15 or less. Last year, they were third in the W with a field goal made percentage. The percentage of their field goals made assisted, they were 71.2. I think they're down this year to about 66.8. So from third to sixth. So, okay, do we have enough to make defenses react to what we're trying to do? Now, I think Bree Jones will help with that. But how many teams in this league are going to look at Ollie Chagre and Ryan Howard, I think, the second scoring duo in the W, and just say, hey, we're going to make it hard, but you got to go get yours. We're not going to allow your play to open up things for everyone else. Is that the ultimate goal? Is that the ultimate end game for the Atlanta Dream? Because for me, I've joked as this season has gone on, every year I kind of give a team the, don't get mad at me, Connecticut, but the Connecticut Sun like award, where you are a gritty, grindy defensive team that is a contender, but sometimes your offense leaves you. Have the Atlanta Dream become those Connecticut Sun teams?
I think for their hopes, they hope, well, like, yes, like, let's get a finals appearance in, et cetera. But like, I don't think they ultimately want to be that. And I think you want to lean on the offensive firepower you have and like find something to where we can get the best out of Alicia Gray. We can get the best out of Ryan Howard. When Bree Jones returns, we can mix her in. I think this is why, like, quietly, this is why the start to the season for Jordan Canada has been so important for them, to where you can have someone that can unlock Alicia and Ryan Howard off the ball to start possessions, someone that could just win drives for you and force rotations. And at least to start the year, Jordan Canada was shooting pretty well from three. And so, like, you know, it's always a question of how consistent the jumper is going to be for her throughout the course of an entire season. But that's where her play feels important. And on the nights that she doesn't have it, I think she was, 4 of 12 from the field in this particular game. There's like, okay, who is generating the advantages to where we can fully capitalize on these? And like, I would also Dream didn't do well when they did generate open shots as well. But the process felt kind of wonky. And so for their sake, I hope it doesn't get to a point where teams are like, okay, we can be physical with Ryan or Alicia off the ball, on the ball, and it ties back into what the Fever did with some of the hedges and things. We can put two on the ball while also just having a very comfortable help point somewhere so we can pre-rotate. We can take away your obvious stuff out of that advantage too. And now we are dictating turns and funneling shots to places where you may not want them to be. And I think it kind of ties back into what the Indiana Fever did in this particular game, to where now when Ryan's on the ball or when Alicia Gray is on the ball, we can put two on the ball, pre-rotate to your role, and now we can funnel shots in a way to where we're dictating terms to you. Now, I feel like that's more of a playoff question for them in terms of their ultimate ceiling, but I don't want that to become the book on them either. So that's just something to be cognizant of, and I'm going to be keeping tabs on what this Dream offense looks like. That's just kind of been the one thing to poke at with them this year, despite their hot start. Quickly, though, while we're on the Atlanta Dream, I don't want this to be a completely negative thing, though they did just lose last night. I still remain very impressed with what their defense has been so far this year. I have had an absolute blast watching this team get after it. The Jordan Canada ball pressure, the Alicia Gray ball pressure, and what she's doing off the ball. Ryan Howard, who has been phenomenal on the defensive end and has fully built off of the all-defense campaign from last season. Angel Reese has been incredible and coverage versatile in this one. I was kind of intrigued. Like, it did come later in the Fever firmly had it in hand. But Atlanta closing small-ish, bringing in Borlase for Naz Hillman and having Angel at the five, I was like, I wonder what that lineup looks like with more usage. So that's going to be another thing I'm keeping an eye on when they get to those Angel at the five looks with smaller groupings. But overall, like, I've really enjoyed watching this team defend. And as you mentioned up top in this game, the Fever ultimately won. It wasn't like the Fever just, like, they put up 105 and just lit them alive or anything like that. Like, Atlanta defended well for most of that game. That's something else that Carl Smesko spoke to post game. Happy with the defense. We just can't get to a point to where we're just kind of pounding the ball in the dirt, et cetera, and looking that way. So I want to give some love to the Atlanta Dream defense. Is, I guess in terms of defensive rating, they're second right now. Is there a better defense than the Atlanta Dream at Full Tilt? Will be a question I will toss to you.
Well, before I answer that, you know, this wasn't meant to be negative. I think the Dream are a very good team. I just think it's about finding a consistent formula that keeps them in that top tier, top three, top. They put the work in. So it's just about, okay, what are the next steps for this Dream team to consistently be able to say, we can do this every single night. Are they the best defense in the league conversation? I would probably have them, the Valkyries, together to a degree off the top of my head. I think you're going to yell at me, but I think the New York Liberty are starting to brew some things on that defensive front. And if they can get all their people together, that could get interesting. But I would not mind if you put the Dream up there. I think the Valkyries are lights out every single night.
That gives us a natural segue into the late game from the Thursday slate, which features two of these elite defenses. The team that actually has the best defensive rating in basketball right now, the Minnesota Lynx, with another win as they beat the Valkyries 87-84. The Golden State Valkyries right now fifth in defensive rating following that game. But as we recently talked about, they have been insane defensively in their own right and at their absolute apex. There aren't many defenses that can match what they can get to. But I will say quickly on the broad note, Steve, this was one of my favorite regular season games of the season because of what these defenses generally like to do. And so I came in with a high level of intrigue here. Well, we were fresh off of the Valkyries conversation where they're driving all over the place. We have players that can win in isolation. We're certainly going to get threes up. We're facing a Lynx team that has activity-based bigs. We're going to be aggressive with our help at the nail. Let's see what y'all do. Minnesota Lynx, we're running a whole lot of pick and roll, but we obviously have some flow-based elements with our off-ball movement. Olivia Miles at the head of the snake. Caleb McBride can fly around. Courtney Williams can do all sorts of things offensively as well. And this Valkyries defense, we are going to swarm. We're going to take away space, et cetera. And so it's funny that this ended up being 87-84, but I was very impressed with the attempts that both of these defenses made in this basketball game. So I just had a lot of fun. That's kind of where I wanted to start with this basketball game, Steve.
Oh, Nekias Duncan, you are one of one because we had the Lynx and the Valkyries, who are two of the top defenses, and I missed the Lynx on when you asked me, so sorry to Minnesota and Minneapolis. But we had a game where Olivia Miles, who, by the way, has been incredible all season long, electric, getting downhill, taking whatever space you need. I can go ahead and finish this. I can make whatever pass I'd like. I'm putting my stamp on my rookie season. Had only made two threes coming into last night. Olivia Miles makes 8 three-pointers against the Golden State Valkyries. And let me tell you, you felt every one of them, especially in the first half. And that's a WNBA rookie record. For most threes in a single game.
It's pretty big.
And for me, my mind was like, okay, what does that look like? What do you do if Olivia Miles has the jump shot and gets to it when she wants to get to it? Because you got to remember, my journey with Olivia Miles is in the W has been like, okay, what's it going to look like when teams try and throw different coverages at her in the same game, right? If you go straight drop, okay, I'm gonna get my defender on my hip. I'm gonna turn the corner. We're gonna see what happens. See what shakes. If you're trying to go under, I can get to a rescreen, whatever. But if I can mix in timely shots, or I can just say this is my night. I'm taking these shots. that's a different level to me as far as having to deal with a problem. And so how did you absorb Olivia Miles just kind of saying, like, you thought it was this, it's also that. It's it's Winnie the Pooh, et cetera, et cetera.
It's a rap. Yeah. I think for me, Steve, it took me back to something that I said about a week and a half ago. And it's something that we talked about a little bit offline more than anything, to where I tweeted out, I think May 25th. And I said something to the effect of, I have mostly enjoyed the Olivia Miles experience, but I am quickly approaching the team should probably just late switch against her portion of the program if she's not going to be willing to take some of the pull-ups that are available to her. And so it was fascinating to me that the Valkyries mixed in the volume of unders that they did in this basketball game. To give you a quick stat on this front, Steve, last three games for Olivia Miles in pick and roll, when teams go under, Chicago Sky went under 9 of her picks. Over 1.4 points per possession on those trips for the Minnesota Lynx. You take that. Against the Phoenix Mercury, in which, oh boy, they got the Mercury out of there quickly. Went under on 5 of her picks. 5 points per possession, but that's low volume, etc. The Golden State Valkyries went under 22 times in this basketball game against Olivia Miles. Very clear, like, we are trying to take these drives off of the board. As you already mentioned, Steve, we can the Lynx counter with rescreens. They have answers to this question. But it was interesting to see the Valkyries like, no, this is what we are going to do against you. And Olivia Miles responds with not just the rescreen and getting downhill anyway and making reads. I'm just taking threes off the bounce. And that second quarter in particular was electric. Like, not only was she feeling it, you could see that she knew that she was feeling it. And so, like, kind of the bounce that she had flowing into these pull-up attempts, you see kind of like the post shot emote for her. She's like backpedaling and stuff. Like, she's a rhythm player. She's a flair player. She's incredibly fun. And so, like, to your broader question, I am intrigued by what happens. Not necessarily that she's going to make 8 threes, because, like, it's a record for a reason. This is not a thing that happens a bunch. I'm more intrigued by Olivia just being willing to take those shots. Like, to take 11 threes honestly spoke to me more than her making 8. You want her in a place to where she is willing and in rhythm to, like, take these shots off the bounce and to take these shots against unders. Because if she is willing to do that, teams have to think more about, are we actually going to stick with this to this degree? And that just opens up the floor to her again if teams decide we cannot, for the reasons that you mentioned. Can get downhill against matchups, can make any pass that you need her to. And because of the way that the Lynx space around her, and re-space around her for that matter, a player that's standing in the corner one moment might be on the wing the next. You can't get a beat on the offense as a whole. It just makes them even more difficult to deal with. And as you see on the graphic, if you're watching on YouTube, and if you're not, 2 of 18 in her first 9 games of her career from 3. 18 attempts in her first 9 games, 11 against the Valkyries. I don't think it's going to be 11 attempts a game, but if there's a middle ground to be found and she finds it quickly, it does get scary because she just processes the floor so well already. And I would imagine with more experience, like, that's just going to get better for her.
I think it's just something that has to be on the table, something I can access if I need it. This is not something you can just automatically do with going under. So I thought it was interesting to see the progression of, oh, y'all just really going under, huh? Like, it's not just, I'm not just going to swing the ball anymore. Okay, I'm just going to let this fly. But I think it also just ties in overall to what the Lynx are as a whole. Like, you mention it and you think about it, you go back to 2024, I think they were second in defensive rating. Last year, they were first in defensive rating. This year, they're first in defensive rating. Doesn't matter who's here regarding. And we can continue to find a way to produce offensively with different personnel. And so I think they've been really dynamic in the contributions they've gotten from Howard and Coffey. Because you got to remember, this Lynx run was kind of built on, okay, we're going to have 5 players who can do X, Y, and Z, who can drive, shoot, pass. We're going to just be able to flow and do a lot of different things. They still have elements of that. But also, Natasha Howard's roles have been a whole lot of a difference maker for the Minnesota Lynx. Mm-hmm. Coffey has consistently just been in the right place at the right time and made the right play. And so we haven't seen the best of Kayla McBride yet. Courtney Williams just gets to be Courtney Williams because Olivia Miles exists. Like, we can just go out there and play. And then the defensive activity they play with where, okay, we're going to pressure the ball. We're going to rotate. You can make skips. You can make passes. That's where it gets interesting. And so I think it's a big tip of the cap to Olivia Miles for just kind of continuing to stamp what her rookie year has been. But I think for the Minnesota Lynx overall, they're putting themselves in a different conversation to a degree early in the season. Now, I don't know how far that conversation is because it is early in the season, mm-hmm. but they're certainly up there. Where are you at with the Lynx? Are they truly the big dog of the WNBA?
The early success would lead me to believe yes. Second in offense, first in defense, first in net rating as of recording. A plus 13 net rating, not only is that first in the league, they're the only team above double digits right now. Like, it has been a gap between them and everyone else, and they do currently have the best record in the league. So, like, in a literal sense, yes. Now, if we are projecting ahead to the playoffs, everyone at full tilt, and hopefully everyone with reasonable health, am I ready to say the Lynx are one yet? Like, I don't know if I get there, but it is worth noting they are doing this without Nafisa Collier, who happens to be pretty darn good at basketball and accentuates everything they do on both ends of the floor. And so, again, it's June 5th. It's very early. This is the first week of Commissioner's Cup play. We'll see what happens over the next 3 weeks or so. But they are putting themselves in position to be in this dance. Like, they are firmly, in a literal sense, they have the best record in the league, so duh, they're a top four team. But this is part of why I was pretty high on them heading into the year. And I think you also were pretty high on them heading into the year, where it's like, they just need players to do their jobs and they still have all-stars in the building. Structurally, they are going to be very sound. I think people anticipated Olivia Miles showcasing positive things this year. I don't know if many people thought it was going to be 17-5-6 with strong shooting splits, high-level efficiency, and everything else. But you add her into the mix and you're officially getting Nafisa Collier back. Like, this sets up for them to be team nobody wants to see. And based on what the start has been, people probably just don't want to see this Lynx team anyway, based on what they're doing on both ends of the floor right now.
I think the Nafisa Collier portion looms large because they have not only a base, a formula, they have a superstar to add to what is already an 8-2 season, right? Like, we're not at the quarter portion, we're getting closer and closer. The funniest part is, right, they're undefeated on the road. They're 3-2 at home. That's not really normal Lynx basketball. But what is also funny is the Las Vegas Aces are 6-1 on the road and have not won a single home game. And they've only played two. So things get very, very interesting. You know, I was going to try and sprinkle some raisins in the potato salad and look at the Lynx schedule because they have beaten the Chicago Sky 3 times. And they beat the Mercury 2 times, which feels different than what we would have said earlier in the season.
Yeah.
You can admit that. So for me, I'm interested to see what do the Lynx look like against the Aces next weekend, and what do the Aces look like against the Lynx. But we'll talk about that next week. But it's a big-time salute to Lynx. They have put themselves in the correct position to have the success they've been looking for, and they've been climbing and climbing and climbing and putting the work in for years. It's just really been fascinating to watch them plug and play and execute their vision as a team on both ends of the floor.
There we go. Can I toss you an Olivia Miles questions before we pivot? Because obviously sure. She has been fantastic. We've talked a lot about what the offense has been. 17-5-6, 56% on twos, 35% from three after that last game, fourth in points generated, her own scoring plus the points off of assists. She's been insane. How have you felt about the Olivia Miles defense experience so far this year, Steve?
That feels like a setup. What do you think about Olivia Miles' defense?
No, it's not a setup. I have thoughts.
No, you have thoughts. So just let them go. I'll contribute.
Okay. It's been interesting watching Olivia Miles on defense for me this year. If you look at what some of the tracking data says about her, not only has she been a great defender, she's been like DPOY level based on the tracking data that we have so far. She's top 5 in drives defended. The Lynx allowing under 0.8 points per possession on those trips, featuring a drive defended by Olivia Miles. Super elite number. In pick and roll, top 5 in pick and rolls defended. Around 0.8 points per possession on those trips. When defending off-ball screens, 0.7. When defending in ISO, she's top 5 in ISOs defended as well. 0.8. it's kind of insane what this looks like. And then you watch a Lynx game and it's just like, well, I don't feel like Olivia Miles has been elite on the defensive end. Like, I have some, you know, some pre-action prep questions for her. I have some screen navigation questions for her, though it's gotten better as the year goes on, gone on. So that's where, like, it was in earnest how you felt about it, because there's like a very wide split between like how I have felt versus like what the numbers are saying on this front. She clearly has not been bad. I also don't think she has been best perimeter defender in basketball if you bake all these player tracking stuff together. And so I just want to get your general thoughts. We also just haven't had like our official rookie report to get into specific things, et cetera, like that. So it wasn't a setup.
Oh no, I don't think it was. I don't doubt it was earnest, but you had thoughts about that. More thoughts than I did. And I can recognize that. I'll pull the curtain back for the dunkers. I know when Nikias is setting me up to ask a question he already has an answer to. So let's get to your answer first, and then let's talk about it. I think it's just Olivia Miles is a rookie, right? And the Lynx are a very good team. So I don't necessarily put the weight of the Lynx defense on what Olivia Miles is doing or not doing. I think Olivia Miles, for the most part, is doing her job, which is a little bit complex within what the Lynx have to do defensively to be this good. And so this is where keep the numbers away from me for a little bit. Let me let my eyes see, okay, what are you doing consistently? When are you getting beat? How are you getting hit? Are your rotations good? Is your screen navigation good? Are you defending multiple matchups? Are you doing your work early? When are you having struggles within what the Lynx want you to do? And when are you having success within what they want you to do? Because are you being asked to necessarily do X, Y, and Z defensively? Yes. But also, do you have to take every single matchup? Not sure.
No.
So for me, it's just like, okay, especially considering it's a rookie, let's see how it grows. And let me identify, okay, what's the off-ball look like? What's the on-ball look like? How's that continue to grow? Are there certain actions that give you trouble? There are certain matchups that give you trouble. So it's too early for me to just kind of put the stamp on it. So to be earnest, I was just avoiding putting a stamp on it because that's not where I was at. So, but the effort's been there. The effort's been there.
No, that's fair. Like, the effort has been there. And again, like, you could kind of see game by game, she is getting better and more comfortable within what the Lynx ask her to do. Like, even with defending drives, like knowing when and how to funnel some of these when she does feel like she's getting beat, I feel like that part has gotten better. And she does just have really good hands. And so even going back to that Valkyries game, like, just multiple strips on drives from her. And it's just like, okay, if she has the prerequisite effort, she's able to funnel and contain well, and then she can use the hands. Like, there are elements of legit event creation and being, like, not just a part of a great defense, but being part of the reason they are a great defense. And so for me, with the numbers, like, this is early sample size, as you already alluded to, it's not like she is taking on the toughest perimeter assignment every single night. Like, that's not her role. It does suggest to me less that she's the best guard defender in basketball, because I don't think she is that right now. But more that it is a positive that she can exist within this system and do most of what is being asked of her. And similar to the offensive end, as she gets more experience and as she gets more comfortable, this should get better, because I think she has the tools to be a good defender. So I am intrigued. That is ultimately where I land on that front, Steve. Now, can I sprinkle in a very quick team-based question before we get to our games of the week?
Yeah, man.
Am I?
What you got?
I generally wanted to ask, like, I have been intrigued with the Connecticut Sun, especially since Layla Lacan has come back. And this isn't going to be another Layla Lacan segment, to be clear. My thoughts are very well known on that front. But, like, as Brittany Griner has gotten healthy, with the season that Anissa Morrow has put together, are we going to reach a point with the Sun where they just become the super competitive group that nobody really wants to see, despite what the record is? I think the start has just kind of doomed them to being towards the bottom of the standings. But, like, am I wrong for being, like, more intrigued than the record suggests with what the Sun could put together when healthy?
I mean, isn't every team kind of that?
Well, yes.
here's my basis, right? You look at the lower half of the W standings. Do you actually want to play the Seattle Storm with all their guards empowered and Olafam becoming whatever that was? Good God, watch out. The Phoenix Mercury are fighting for their life. The Phoenix Mercury are fighting for their life. The Chicago Sky are fighting for their life. The Los Angeles Sparks are fighting for their life. The Washington Mystics, they're young, figuring out. And then you got Temple and the Fire. So I understand that you're saying, hey, am I wrong to be intrigued by the Sun? But there's not, like, the league is loaded with teams that are different and hard to beat. So, you know what I mean? I don't know if they're going to be easy to find, hard to beat. They might be easy to beat. You never know.
There's no way I set you up for that. You know what? I had things I want to talk about with Diamond Miller. We'll save the Sun for next week. Absolutely not. Steve, what game are you most excited for this weekend? Unbelievable from you.
Oh, no. We got to go with Nikaiza's game of the week first. I would like to see what the big dog wants to watch. Tell the people exactly what you're hyped for, your number one game. Because I know what mine is. And I hope I guessed right.
Okay. Well, Steve, my game of the week or game of the weekend got to be Aces Valkyries, partly because of something that you mentioned a little bit earlier. The Aces haven't won a home game yet. And so for them to now be facing the Golden State Valkyries, who are, one, just a really good team, two, are going to be looking for revenge after just recently losing to the Las Vegas Aces, and three, this is yet another game for the Las Vegas Aces in which they have a little bit of a longer layoff between their last game to the next one. And it is a 12 p.m. local start for the Aces on top of this. So my eyes are peeled. And then the fourth thing for the Las Vegas Aces, we'll get more updates hopefully later today. The Aces just didn't have any of their backup guards available in their most recent matchup. And so we will see the status of Jewel Lloyd, of Kennedy Carter. Like, we'll see if they have any of them available for this Valkyries game, because that would seem to be important against this team. And so that's kind of where I start. Like, what is this Valkyrie offense going to look like? Because the Aces, as they had to size up without those guards missing, the switching sure did feel better. We got some Asia at the 3 minutes, which is not something that I had on my bingo card at all happening this season. And so, like, that part gets interesting. We did have the conversation on Tuesday about teams potentially bogging Golden State down a little bit with some of their switching. So, like, that's fascinating. But that's where I start, Steve. What say you?
That's what I thought you'd say. And so I had circled down a game that I knew you would pick. I'm going with the Indiana Fever at the New York Liberty, mainly because I'm intrigued how these teams treat each other, and it's an important one for both of them. Coming into the season, you probably had them as championship contenders, favorites, however you want to say it. Both teams have kind of had to figure out and battle through some of the noise and find their way. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of a pressure they put on each other. Is the Liberty defense going to be ready for the Fever offense? Is the Fever offense going to be ready for, is the Fever defense going to be ready for the Liberty offense? How did they kind of match up? Because it's going to be a statement game for one of them. And both of them need to make a statement to kind of continue climbing up the ranks. So I'm intrigued to see how that looks like. I have alternate games as well. And we're going to test and see if I've avoided any of yours.
Okay.
I have the Dallas Wings and Los Angeles Sparks on Friday. Kelsey Plum returning. Okay. Paige Beckham.
Welcome back. Court.
Sign me up. Just give me some popcorn, some water. But it is what it is. We'll be there. We'll be locked in. Another alternate game that I also have, and I'm hoping you don't have this one as well. It's a Sparks weekend. Give me Fire Sparks. We can do stuff defensively, but we do a lot of stuff offensively. And what's that look like against each other? I'm intrigued. So what say you? What are the other games
like
you
had? I
flipped the script on you. I flipped the script. That's the script. Did I do it? Did I take your games away? Did I get you?
You did a good job. Neither game I had on the board. So I will give you the salute. We avoided overlap. We did the thing. But if we're sticking with Friday, I will begrudgingly bring this team back up into the fold. I am intrigued by Sun Sky later tonight. The Chicago Sky. Still trying to find a level of consistency as they've been dealing with injuries, most notably Rekia Jackson Dunn for the year. They have some other players in and out of the lineup. Gabriela Jaquez has been in and out of the lineup as well. It has been such a fascinating Camila Cardoso season. And so I am curious, like her versus Brittany Griner, there's just going to be something between that matchup. So I'm fascinated there. Also, for a Sky team that in theory wants to force turnovers, kind of flow and transition, get to their drive and kick, etc., the Sun do just kind of have, like, Layla Khan, welcome back. Saniya Rivers will fly around all over the place defensively. I'm curious to see who Diamond Miller is matching up with defensively in this one, which kind of goes back to some of the headlock that I want to get into with the Sun before you dropped what you dropped about 5 minutes ago, where it's like I have been intrigued with the Diamond Miller defense experience. So like that is a fun one for me that I'm going to be keeping eyes on. And then on Monday, since we won't hear from us again until Tuesday, Fever Mystics, run it back. What is this going to look like for the Washington Mystics and their offense? Can the Indiana Fever subside? I love that you brought up Fever Liberty, because like that is something that is also on my radar. I actually want to ask you a quick question on that game, Steve. Since the switching from the Fever has been all the rage, figuratively and literally, how much switching do you feel like they can get to against this version of the Liberty?
They can get to a lot. Now, how much can they live with? It'll get interesting depending on what the Liberty decide to do and when they decide to switch and who they decide to hit in the post. That's why I brought up the rotation point earlier. Hey, this is cool and all, but if teams know this is what you want to do, what's that going to look like if they stop at the elbow? Just keep an eye on it.
No, that part gets interesting. I'm fascinated by that one. But yeah, I'll say Sun Sky on Friday, Fever Mystics on Monday would probably be my alternate games. But the eyes are definitely peeled for Aces Valkyries for me this weekend.
That man snuck the Sun Sky. I mean, the Sun Thoughts inning. Anyways, that's funny. Well done.
Listen, I had to do it. Can I ask you a Liberty question really quickly?
Sure.
How have you felt about the John Quayle pick and rolls? I like them.
It just depends on what team they're playing. I mean, having Stewie screen for John Quayle in theory is great, but if some teams have the personnel to make that a switch, it doesn't have the same impact. So again, some teams it's going to be great. I think it's good to keep her involved. For me, I'm more intrigued by the John Quayle drives when spaced within the flow of what the Liberty are trying to do. Mm-hmm. Having her be able to make threes is one thing, but those being drives, depending on like switches and matchups, I think that is where you get to a different kind of sauce. Like, I like that the Liberty are more willing to go inverted with not just Stewie but Jonquelle, but it's going to depend on the personnel and who's involved and who's screening. And so I think from game to game, like the volume is fantastic. From game to game, the impact may vary. So they're going to have nights where a team may not be ready for it or may not have people to guard it, and it's going to look fantastic. You're going to have some nights where it's switched. Like Dallas was like, we don't care. And so it didn't look great.
Let me tell you something right now.
Against Toronto, looked fantastic. So it's a good thing that's on the table and something they want to get to, but I don't think it's where you can just kind of like stamp and be like, take this to the bank. People still go to banks? They don't go to banks anymore, huh? It's crazy.
I'm old. I guess it depends. As you just jogged the memory, Liberty Temple was a fun basketball game. I don't know if Niara Sobley said something to John Quayle before that game, or if this was just a general, hey, Sandy on the other side, Niara, you were my teammate, we had practice battles, etc. John Quayle was just ready for that entire basketball game. Was it 22-17 in that game? You had the drives, yeah. You had the shot, you had the threes, you had the inverted pick and roll. She had herself a day. Also, hopefully,
you being too loud on the pod. I don't know if we're doing an outro, but thank you for listening to this episode of Down the Spot. Much appreciated. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports NBA channel. That's where our content will live for a lot of what we do. You subscribe to the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel, where our W content lives. You can follow him on social media at Nikias NBA. You could follow me at Steve Jones 20 if you want to, but it is what it is. I still appreciate you. And with that, we say have a good day. What you be saying? Arrivederci? Au revoir?
Peace. What? We will catch y'all next week. Oh, my.